Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Celestion Speakers. Make sure to check out their new Celestion V-Type speaker. The 8-ohm speakers are available in stores in October, and the 16-ohms are available in November. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
Yes, welcome everybody.
So Jeff, last week's show with Billy Sheehan was amazing, right?
Yes, he's an incredible player, and he's just a nice guy. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we posted up quite a few videos of him playing in air, and then we had a demo of him talking about his Yamaha Attitude bass beforehand. And just for folks that are listening, I had mentioned on our Facebook page, if you want to, we have some autographed pictures from him that he signed while he was here. If you want to win one of those, the first three people to email my email, scott@flowguitarenthusiast.com, scott@flowguitarenthusiast.com, and tell me what the blue and green lines on his pickup mean and why they're there. You can find the answer from one of the videos that we posted, so you'll have to watch the videos to find out the answer, and then email me, and then I will, if you're one of the first three, we'll send you off an autographed picture from Billy Sheehan.
Totally cool. That's good.
Now, what else did I want to bring up? Oh, well, what have you been up to?
Well, you already leaked it out on the internet, but yesterday was my birthday, so I was with family and stuff. But I actually, for my birthday, I did pull out my Les Paul, and I played a lot, so that was kind of cool. And I think I'm going to have Monique do some mods on my guitar, so we're talking about that right now. So I think I'm going to make my Les Paul even better.
Well, very cool. Well, before we start the show, I definitely want to talk about the V-Type speaker from Celestion. And we actually have Rick Skillman from Celestion, who is the North America sales representative and artist relations. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, guys. Hey guys, what's happening?
We're doing good. Thanks for being on the show.
So, can you tell us about tell us about this V-Type speaker, and then just kind of tell us how this combines old technology and new technology for Celestion?
All right. Thanks for having me. The V-Type concept, we've been talking about it for a while, and it's funny, in the world of Celestion, we've always had this price gap. So you had the lesser expensive speakers that were great if you just needed to slam a speaker in the box before the gig. But as far as getting into the tone, everything would start at the 120, 130, 140 and up type pricing. But if we were going to do something and make it available to the masses at a better price point, it still had to be great. And because we were starting from a clean slate, we didn't have rules, if you want to use that term, as far as what a greenback is or what a G12H is. We already use, we have one of the largest engineering teams in the world, in the world of speakers at least. And we have a lot of really cool technology, but sometimes it's hard to place because we have these rules to follow. So on this speaker, no rules. The rule was it had to sound great. It had to sound like a vintage Celestion. It's definitely up there in the same family, tone-wise, as a similar to an H, similar to a Greenback, similar to a Vintage 30. It has a lot of the properties that you would associate the Celestion tone with, but we were able to do it with a, still get 70 watts, but out of a, I think it's a 31 or 2 ounce magnet, smaller magnet, but we did work in the voice coil to take the power. And it's a $99 speaker, and which is great. For us, it's definitely a milestone because I kind of liken this to the Boxster, if you will. There's a, if I could say a Porsche Boxster. it's great. Some people like it as much as they like their Turbo Carreras or whatever other car they have. It just happens to be the price that, you know, more people can obtain it at. And that's what we wanted to do. We want to make something, no concession. It just had to be no compromise. Just had to be really good. But we want to be able to hit that $99 price. And we're really excited about it. We've had the largest OEM amp manufacturer, one of the largest in the world, already. It's going to be in their biggest launch of 2014. Actually, I think they're hitting the market soon. We'll be loaded with these. We call them the VTI. It's also known as the G12 V70. We're really excited.
What artists would you kind of associate the sound that you would get from these speakers?
Man, what was cool about these speakers, we actually debuted them in New York at an amp show a couple months ago over the summer. And it was so funny because depending on which player was playing it, you know, tone in the bones type statement. I know that sounds very vague, but I had guys playing just that kind of Van Halen-ish. You know, it does touch on a bit of that Greenback vibe, but it's probably a little more lively sounding. What artist would I associate? I mean, if you're just a blues classic rock guy, I mean, it comes down to if you just like that British chime. So any artist you'd associate that would use, you know, and we are grateful to have been on most famous recordings that you can name. Artist-wise, actually, this is better. One of the first artists who tried it and is known for his tone and his capabilities is Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses. And he actually plays everything from big Gretsch hollow bodies, kind of covering the big chimey rhythms sounds of Guns N' Roses, and then he can jump on a solo and then turn around and burn a country riff that will make you fall over. So he's very versatile in his sound, and he said out of the speaker, he's able to coax all different styles out of it. So it's just a really good platform of great British tone from the original speaker manufacturer at a price that you can, it makes it worthwhile to reload a amp or a cabinet, because these days you can get cabs for a pretty good deal, almost as much as it would cost you if you just bought the raw frame speakers. So we wanted to hit the price point where guys, you know, would say, hey, I love my cabinet, I just want to re-outfit it with speakers, and you're off to the races for not too big of a hole in your wallet.
Sounds great. Just to want to remind everybody that these speakers, the 8 ohms will be available in October, and the 16 ohms will be available in November. So thanks again, Rick, for taking the time to talk to us about them.
Always a pleasure, guys. You're doing great things here. I really enjoy it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go ahead and start. We got a great bunch of people here, and I think we have a good cross-section of people that really do know inside and out what guitars are about. We have a couple of different types of guitar techs here, and I think that's important to note that there are the guys that like tour with an artist and basically maintain their equipment, and we also have the guys that basically people come in out of the, you know, from the, through their door of their shop, and basically they do repairs, setups. And so I'm just going to briefly go through everybody here. Monique, which I want to thank for helping put this whole thing together. She brought a bunch. She knows everybody here and really made this happen. Monique, we already had on our Women in Music, and she's done tech work for Slash, Peter Frampton, the Alice in Chains. James Grover, who's the guitar tech for Kevin Eubanks for the Tonight Show. It was on the Tonight Show. James Hood, who owns Buffalo Brothers Guitars in Carlsbad, I'm sorry, I always get that messed up. And he has James Hood Guitar Repair, and he does repairs for everybody, and has done a lot of interesting stuff. And then also John Goodwin, I'm glad was able to come down. He's worked with David Mustaine, Earl Slick, Marco Mendoza, and he's done guitar and amp. It's a lot of stuff on custom amp setups. So welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Show. It's really great to have you guys here.
How are you doing?
Nice to be here.
Hey, we've got quite a wide variety. We got jazz, we got metal, we got rock, And we got a store owner that takes anybody coming in. So it's great.
That's cool.
Well, I mean, you know.
I turned somebody away the other day, actually.
Really?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if it's not worth it, you know, them to put the money in the instrument, I'm going to say, well, you might want to hang that on the wall.
Now, we'll just go ahead around and just give a little brief description what your job is and what you actually do to give an idea of the people, you know, what guitar tech means, because it's a pretty broad term, I think. There's just a lot of different gigs that you can do that's under the term guitar tech. So we'll start with Monique.
Well, I've been working more locally. My last gig was the last Alice in Chains album that was just released. And so I was working in studio, went through the entire Cantrell collection and a bunch of Inez basses, and basically kept things in check while they were tracking, and it was beautiful. It was during the summer, and they keep it about 50 degrees and hence in studios. So I was loving it. It was really good.
Quick question for you. Does he always have his G string tuned down to, was it F sharp or something? Or does he tune
he
up,
used,
or what's he doing?
He used a lot of various tunings, a lot of drop tunings, yes. Yeah. And so the whole trick was intonating for all the different drop tunings. And then some of the guitars had some pretty heavy gauges on them. And some of, you know, we had to experiment with a few of his guitars to see, you know, if they would even tolerate some of the higher gauge strings that we were using, because they wanted that growl for this album. If you've heard this album, you can hear, you know, the deep growl that he's got going. And so there was a lot of experimenting with different strings and different, you know, and having to intonate and then re-intonate for the new gauges. And so I had my work cut out for me, but it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, you know, I work locally, and I also do Tolexing for amplifiers, so I refurbish amps, and I love doing that. I feel like Martha Stewart. It is. It's arts and crafts.
Okay.
There goes Michaels.
John?
Yeah, how you doing? Well, I started out working in music stores, actually, and just advising all different players on all kinds of equipment. And through a sound man that mixed one of our bands that I had at the time, he got me a gig building some rigs for Megadeth. And I ended up building each one of the guys in Megadeth's rigs, and they were analog-based. They were not digital switching. They were all analog-switched, and they wanted presets, etc., but just preset mics on amps and amplifier sounds. Mm-hmm. So it was really, it was a challenge to get there. They didn't want to use any, you know, fancy Bradshaw rigs or anything like that. They just wanted straight up switching.
Okay.
And so that's how I'm sort of a system specialist. I like amplifiers, effects, routing, stage setups, and did more backline management. You know, I'd oversee the whole thing, et cetera. So
with their rigs, they were using basically pure raw amps, just cranked.
They each guitar player used three amps, two for rhythm, one for lead, that they would switch on and off on an A-B system. It was preset with an echo and a distortion all of its own. And Dave Mustaine's tone, we call it razor blades on glass. It was a Tom Scholz Rockman into some vintage Plexi Marshalls.
Yes.
Oh, wow, the Rockman classic.
It was a rack-mounted Rockman.
Yeah.
But I've worked for really diverse people. I manage Christopher Cross's acoustic guitar collection, just out of, there's a non sequitur. And I worked for Coverdale, and on the Coverdale project, Marco Mendoza was the bass player, and Earl Slick was the guitar player. And that was really fun. And those guys also liked a lot of different amplifiers and amplifier setups, room miking. So I lean toward that. I work on guitars all the time and, you know, fix a pickup here and all that kind of stuff. But my specialty was more the gear.
Yeah. Well, talking about guitars, knowing Christopher Cross's acoustic guitar sound, they sounded great. So
he was really diligent about taking care of them and humidifiers and everything. I learned a lot about it. He told me a lot of really cool stories.
That's cool.
I think his most impressive credit is what my kids love to tell everybody, and that's he did the Goofy Goober for SpongeBob.
That's
SpongeBob
right.
Movie.
I'm the guitar player in
they
the SpongeBob
just, they
movie.
Lose it every time that comes on. Hey,
I say Bikini Bottom, man. This is serious
stuff here. SpongeBob. Goober rocks.
Now, James Grover, tell us a little bit what you have to do.
Well, we work with Kevin Eubanks. You go on stage. We mostly do national tours, and we go from state to state. And my job is to make sure that all guitars are safely handled and make sure they're intonated before a show. I make sure all the gear is up and running before he hits the stage. I don't want Kevin to go in there and have a dead guitar and look at me funny, you know. Yeah. So I want to make sure everything's my job is pretty, it's crucial and it's stressful at times. You know, you go up there and you have to make sure that everything's working to par.
So you're doing everything, both the guitars and the
yes,
amps.
Yes, and stage managing, and I'm also Kevin Eubanks' product manager. You know, I handle all his endorsements from the manufacturers. And everybody always asks me, hey, how does he get that tone? Really, the tone comes from the man behind the guitar, and the guitar, those Abra Veras are just like a big log of wood that just resonate and have great tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah. And then finally, James over there shooting pictures in the studio.
Selfies. Taking selfies.
Oh, hey, that turned out pretty good.
Tell us about what you do.
I own a store in Carlsbad, California called Buffalo Brothers Guitars. And we have a really popular repair department there. We've got about 50 guitars per month that
wow.
come in on top of our backlog of about 60 guitars as well. So I've got about four techs working for me right now. It's busy.
Is that from all over the country or is it just
yeah,
locally?
People drive from Lake Tahoe, from just you know north of here, from L.A., from Yuma, from all over the place.
Wow.
Even ship from all over the country. I do a lot of neck resets for Martin. We're Fender, Martin, Taylor authorized as well. Yeah, finishing. I mean, I could go on and on. There's just a lot
and
of
And you
stuff.
Have a full staff of guys. You have several. How many guys do you have working there?
I've got four techs. It started with me, though.
Right.
I started there. I blew up the repair department. And one thing led to another, and I had a dream, and I said, you know what? I want to grow this thing, and it's happening. It's amazing.
Okay.
So how many guitars do you think you guys work on in a week?
Well, we got about 50 coming in per month.
Wow.
So, you know.
That's a lot.
Just yeah, you should see our calendar. It's
12
amazing.
12 and a half per week.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Yeah. Especially like net resets
right.
or whatever.
But the ones that kick your ass, well then, yeah, you know, then less.
You hang them on the wall.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now let's pull it a little bit different direction. Let's talk about now. You guys have all, I mean, James, you're using specific guitars by the artist that he uses, but you've all had to deal with new guitars, old guitars. What do you see? What's your opinion of the new guitars that are being made right now compared to the vintage? Obviously, everybody's into vintage, but how do you feel about the new guitars, and what do you think are the issues? Are they good, or are there problems, or what's on your wish list? Of, we'll go back. We'll go from James all the way back around again.
Okay.
So go ahead.
You know, I think it's kind of hit and miss, to be quite honest. I mean, you can have a, like for instance, the Guild GADs. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot of bang for the buck. They're doing a really good job with their guitars. Taylor's doing a really great job with their guitars. There's a lot of continuity in their manufacturing. Yet, you still can't take two of the exact same guitar and say that each one of those are going to sound exactly the same. Because,
yeah.
again, it depends on the player. It depends on, you know, that... the pieces of wood that are in
yeah.
that you know in that instrument, even though they came out of the same tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I have seen really it's a mix. We've actually been selling a lot of used instruments, quite honestly, more than new instruments.
Okay.
There's a big market for the used.
Do you find that the like when we were buying Fenders and when I was in school and stuff, the thing about Fenders, Gibsons it was a little more difficult, but back then Fenders were fixable. Do you find that all these guitars are fixable pretty easily, or are there some guitars that are a real pain to try to make them work?
Most of them. Gibson kind of went off the deep end when they when they started putting the circuit boards and the robotic tuners on their guitars. And they're cool. I mean, it's cool to see that happening, you know.
Yeah, I think Firebird X was probably the biggest joke I've ever seen.
but here's what I see the most of. People love the old technology. They love the 1950s ham radio technology that's in these guitars because it's part of the tone.
Right.
Yeah.
Chime in if you guys have any.
Oh
other.
Yeah, you know, I like vintage instruments myself. You know, I mean, the one thing that I see that a lot of people don't know how to do is take care of the vintage instrument. You know, if you own a vintage instrument, I suggest that you get like a damp rid. in the room, keep the moisture from getting to the instrument because it's aged. The wood is aged, so it warps easily. And if you start a guitar, just lessen the tension on the strings. You don't want that 300 pounds of tension on a guitar. It's stored away and stored in the upright position to mm-hmm. keep it from going in. But the what I see in new guitars, it depends on the genre of music. I mean, you got bolt-on necks, you got neck-through necks. And it depends on the player, what they're looking for, you know, what kind of tone they're looking for, what kind of specs they're looking for, what's cool, what's not cool, you know, stuff like that. So I always tell people when they ask me, hey, what's a great guitar? It depends what you're looking for. You know, what sound are you looking for? What do you want in a guitar? You know, if you want to sit a hard rock guitar like a Schecter guitar and you want a heavy metal guitar that mm-hmm. is fast and lightning, you can go with the Schecter. If you're not sure what you want, look around, go to pawn shops, go to music stores, see what's around, feel something that's comfortable for you that you like and play, and if there needs modifications, just have someone professional work on it for you.
Yeah.
You know?
The one of the things that I've noticed, if you have a guitar that's a pretty old guitar, you don't want to take it out. You're scared. And I think, John, you probably saw this with some of the other acts, because most of them don't like to bring out their real rare Les Pauls and stuff like that. And I think like Dave Mustaine, he has endorsements, so he gets all these guitars all the time. But can you make the, you know, on the road, do you think that a lot of these guys would use newer guitars just because it's safer? And if they're consistent, like Jackson, I knew one of the things that was a good thing about Jackson's, the necks were made fairly, I mean, they felt the same. A lot of guys that were playing in the 80s and 90s were using those guitars because they were consistent. And I think that's like a lot of guys use Gibsons in the studio and then they use PRS on tour because of that consistency and they know that that guitar will deliver. I mean, do you agree? Disagree?
Well, coming out of the 80s, the Jackson guitar also had a really thin neck. And if you're doing tapping styles, you that gave you just a little bit extra reach. You could still anchor your thumb behind the neck and get a little bit extra reach. And just a little faster, just a little less in your hand, so less resistance, if you will. Mm-hmm. But, you know, arguably you lose some tone, too. What I would say about new guitars, which is really, really important, is anywhere in the world, any factory in the world can make a good guitar now. It used to be when I was a kid, Japanese Les Paul wasn't as good. There was no way. Yeah. The thing was, they just use inferior components. They still had a machine that cut the Les Paul shape and cut the necks and did all this stuff. They just go, oh, wait a minute. If we start using better materials, we can make these guitars too. But then now, this is the crucial thing now. All the major manufacturers have gone to foreign manufacturing plants, and they have like a B-series guitar. Fender has their Mexican-made Strats, etc., and Gibson has Epiphone, which is essentially foreign-made Gibsons. They're really beautiful guitars, and I absolutely advocate for all these great factories. In fact, some of the best Fenders are these Mexican-made Fenders. These guys down there take a lot of pride in their work, and they're really into their jobs, and they love what they're doing, man. They're not getting paid as well, but you know what? They love what they're doing so much. You can see it in the quality. I have a Squire bass. I just think it's the best sounding bass I've ever had.
Yeah,
I haven't owned that many basses, but it's a great sounding bass. Anyway, the point of what I'm trying to make is now the Chinese-made Fernandez or these foreign-made guitars are awesome. They're incredible. They're just, you know, they're top-notch.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, I mean, because I talk to a lot of kids that are just starting, and I was always of the ilk. I mean, back when I got my Fender, I brought my Les Paul and everybody's seen it, and it wasn't well-made back then. That was a real bad time for Gibson. And I had it modded, and we've built a lot of guitars in the past from parts. We'd get necks and we'd get bodies and put them together. And the Squire guitars, like you said, their jazz bass is a killer bass,
and
it's
the Epiphones
really,
too. The Epiphones are awesome.
So you can you know, so like younger kids that can't afford a $3,000 Les Paul or something, I say, you know, you can get a Squire for $300, and then build up if you want to. You can always change the pickups. You can change the bridge. You can put more mass to the bridge, you know, brass, whatever you want to do.
Well, a lot of people don't know, the Epiphone line was revived. What happened was Kalamazoo plant was going to get shut down for making Gibsons.
Mm-hmm.
And some clever people thought, well, wait a minute. Instead of closing it down to make Gibsons, blah, 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 let's switch gears here. And that's when the Epiphone line was revived through that factory being saved at the same time.
John, you're smart.
I didn't know that.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Scott brought in an Epiphone
Epiphone Master Built. It's basically a J45, I mean, the way it's built.
Those are one of those guitars that are a lot of bang for the buck.
And you brought in a Gibson.
An old 70s J45.
And, I mean, they both play beautifully. But, I mean, his guitar plays well. Now, I've been in, you know, I've played like their the Epiphone. I played a couple of Hummingbirds, and they didn't sound as good as his. Wow. So the consistency was a little,
it's always the wood quality. Yeah. It's like, I don't know, like jewelry or even like watches, where you know it gets crazy. I'm not gonna spend $4,000 for a new Les Paul. Sorry, that's crazy. I can find a really awesome one from the 70s for even $700 or $800. I would never buy a new Les Paul. That's crazy.
Tobacco,
that's too expensive.
Please.
Too expensive.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a Les Paul, I mean, if you went out and bought like a regular Les Paul standard, what would you guys recommend if you wanted to make that go from just a good guitar to killer? What would you change on it?
Nut first.
And why would you change the nut on it?
It affects the tone, mm-hmm. and most of the new ones are very plasticky sounding because of the nut. So it just warms things up.
The accuracy of the cut and the placement, it's all, it needs to be done by, it needs to be a little more personal.
Do you still use a plastic nut, or do you use,
have camel bone on my 72.
Oh, okay.
The Slash uses woolly mammoth tusk.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what I have on my Martin is woolly mammoth on it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I have to say, the one thing that I've noticed every Gibson I get, I'm not dogging them, but it's just the G string when you get that plink when you tune it every time,
This is what I'm saying. You're going to get
Paul's
the same kind of guitar.
Yeah.
If you spend $5,000 for these guitars, in fact, I remember reading in Guitar Player magazine, they did the Jimmy Page review of his guitar, his new signature guitar, and they were saying that the edges of the frets were a little cutty. I'm thinking, really? You know, and this is like quite a few years ago, it was $2,500, and your hand's going to get roughed up by the fret edges?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Something wrong with that.
That's quality control, but also, too, I mean, these guitars are coming into shops, and they don't have proper humidity controls, and so they end up drying them out.
Well, but I mean, I have a double cutaway Les Paul with P90s, and I had the frets dressed. And it made a difference. They were rounded on the edges, so that did. I mean, and you're talking about the Jimmy Page guitar. For a $20,000 guitar, you'd think that should be done.
Right.
I'm sorry, but
it's
you know.
Surprising. I've seen so many guitars coming in from, I don't know if I should mention the name, but custom shops, and they're chopping up people's fingers. You know, and I'm thinking, that came from the custom shop? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's like did they forget to do that? You know, really, you know.
Dressing
how
the frets is rule number one for a good guitar. It should be smooth as could be.
Well, we tell them. I mean, that's what we tell them. Hey, look, you know what? These factories, they're blowing these guitars out to make money, and their quality control is only going to go so far. You get a fret dress on this, it's going to be better than factory. You're going to love it.
That's the key thing, quality control. That's what I'm saying about the Mexican and Chinese factories. These guys are into their job. I mean, they are really into it, and they're making beautiful instruments. They care more.
Yeah. Well, Fender has a custom shop now in Mexico. It's kind of cool.
You know what you realize about these? You can get 10 of the same guitars, and one of those guitars is going to be a gem.
That's true, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to really look at that, and you have to say, okay, I got 25 American Strats. One of them is going to be the best sounding guitar.
Yes, thank you, James, because that's the hit and miss that I'm talking about.
Yes.
That you
there's definitely lemons.
With Kevin's setup, Kevin Eubank's setup, how many of those guitars, the custom ones that he uses, how many do you have?
There's quite a few. We have about five that we use on a regular basis, but he has some that are in storage.
Are they pretty consistent, the ones that you're
using?
Yeah,
the Abrevers that we use on tour, they consist of two. The Butterscotch that you see that he used on the Tonight Show, we use that one a lot. We use mostly. He's been using the brown Ape Rivera that you see it with the humbucker pickups, and that's the one he's been using mostly on tour right now with Stanley Jordan.
But there's a consistency from the five, or did you have to make them consistent?
No, they're consistent. The way they came from the from Ape Rivera, the guitars were flawless, and over the years with the road wear and tear, some things go out and you have to replace them. But you know the guitars are great. They sound nice. They intonate perfectly. There's no buzz, and if there's buzz, Kevin always learns to control it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
What should be happening with a quality guitar is somebody in the factory is picking a special piece of wood for that Jimmy Page Les Paul, a special piece of mahogany, a special piece of, you know, maple for that top. Everything should be special. What happens in the cheaper factory, and this is where it really becomes hit and miss, is, okay, there's a pile of ash. Here, go grab one of those, you know. Right. And so there's definitely, of those 10 bodies sitting there, one of them is definitely the sweetheart, right, the one that rings, the one that sings. And you don't, you know, so that's what you definitely do lose. And so what he was saying earlier is, yeah, you got to go play a bunch of guitars and feel it. I always feel in the heel of the guitar, right? Just play an E. And if you feel a nice vibration in your hand, like a little buzz, it should be a little buzz in the middle of your hand. And if you don't feel that, that's not your guitar or anybody's. It's a horrible guitar.
Well, yeah, back to the new and old question. I compare Les Pauls. I play my 72, and there's just something that feels, it's almost like 501s. You buy a new pair, they're all stiff and yucky, but after you own them for a while, you put them on, they kind of grab your backside and it feels good. the newer Les Pauls don't feel good like that to me. All, at least the ones that I've tried, usually they feel very hollow and plastic to me. So.
Well, I know that they hollow them out to make them lighter now. Which,
well, I'm not talking about the chambering. I'm talking about the neck.
The neck?
Yeah, the neck just feels even, so different from a seasoned piece of wood.
Even an R9? Like one of those where they're...
You know, I've actually played a couple of good ones. Yeah, those are pretty nice.
Don't forget about poly finishes, too. Poly finishes kind of screw everything up because when the old Les Pauls, you got the layers of thin lacquer.
Right.
Yeah, mine's
and
a
it
lacquer.
Feels better after it's old.
I'll tell you guys what. I do finishing at my shop. And okay. I've used poly and I've shot nitro. I love nitro. I've pulled the mix out of the cup after it's dried, and I've taken the poly, and it flexes like it's rubber.
Wow.
Okay? And I've taken the nitro, and it flexes a bit, and then it snaps. So it's brittle. It's an organic compound.
Right.
You know, is what it is. It's nitrated cotton.
And that can make a huge difference.
It really can.
Huge.
It really can. I used to not believe it. I really used to not believe
they're
it.
They're saying urethane now. At least they're switching, not poly, excuse me, polyurethane, but urethane has more of a property of a natural lacquer.
I disagree.
Which is, you know.
Really? I disagree because I'm shooting the custom shop urethane two-part catalyzed that I get. In fact, these guys provide the finishes for Fender, I found out. So I'm working on getting my inside.
Are the majors using urethane then? Is that true?
Yeah, I've used, well, I don't know for sure, but I've seen the urethane, the catalyzed stuff, and it's like, man, this stuff's like rubber.
So nobody uses the old, like my Les Paul's a 70. So what is that? That's a lacquer?
That's nitrocellulose lacquer, yeah.
Oh, it is nitrocellulose.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it ages nice. It's a very unstable finish though, see?
And yellow's easy.
Yeah. Well, man, mine's all yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's
like
what's
that
beautiful.
Yeah.
That's what makes it vintage.
It, right. Exactly. It lets the wood, you know, move.
I thought it was because I use lemon wax to polish it, because it takes all the
actually,
gum.
I thought it was the mark
forget
of the beast.
Forget about it. You got to let it age. trying to cover white hair. Forget it.
I just got to throw my 2 cents on a Les Paul. You know, mostly when I pick up a new Les Paul these days, I just feel like it's the strings vibrating, not the wood.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like it's just a stiff guitar.
That's a good way to put it.
Very stiff. All you doing is strumming the strings into the pickups and coming out of the amp. That's pretty much what the guitar does. There's no, you can't really set a nice tone from the guitar these days.
No resonation.
You know? Well, the 50s ones that I played are, you know, they're a lighter wood and they seem to resonate more. My Les Paul, as you guys took a look at before the show, it's pretty heavy and it's pretty, I'm hearing the pickup. I don't think it vibrates too much.
I see.
I mean, it does resonate a little bit as it aged. I think it's actually a little bit more, but it's pretty much the pickups.
Well, let's talk about sustain. Okay. I mean, if you have something that's heavy, and you have that mass that's there, and you have that coupling that's happening in the, you know, in the bridge, and you've got that energy transfer happening, you're going to get a lot of sustain out of that instrument. So having a heavy Les Paul isn't necessarily a bad thing. But James, I hear what you're saying about that it's just there's no resonance.
Yeah.
There's something that's missing, and I don't know if they're just banging them out cookie cutter.
Well, yeah, the key thing to resonance on a guitar is how in aging is the actual wood cell itself. as the piece of wood ages, that wood cell opens up more and more and becomes a little resonating chamber, you know, right. As it dries out. It's got fiber in it at first, and then it dries out. Well, they try to do this with a kiln. They try to put pieces of wood in a kiln and dry it and get that to happen. But in fact, it doesn't happen except for age. That's why a Stradivarius sounds so good. Those little wood cells are open up and just ringing, baby. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, other dead pieces of wood with too much sap in it or whatever, you know.
Well, you have to understand how a Gibson is made these days. It's made of layers of wood glued together, and then they use veneer on top, and then they lacquer it. And that's how they sell the guitar. It's just a big chunk of wood full of glue.
But if it's pieces glued together, then it's not. I think mine's a full piece.
Yeah, they're not going to resonate.
Cut.
They're not going to resonate at all.
There was a whole wave of early Les Pauls that were one-piece mahogany bodies. Mm-hmm. And I actually got to meet Greg Allman one time at a book signing, and we weren't supposed to bring anything else for him to sign, but I snuck my guitar in somehow, and I got it all the way up to the front. They wouldn't let me sign it, but I said, hey, man, it's a 69 Les Paul, and he said, let me see that. And I said, thanks, Greg, because it was so cool, because he was bucking the system. He didn't like that they were pushing me around. And he grabs a guitar and he starts rubbing the body. And he goes, 69, huh? And I go, yeah. And he goes, uh-huh, it's nice. Because he was seeing, he was rubbing his hand on there to see if it was a two-piece mahogany body or one piece. Mm-hmm. And it's a one piece.
Feeling for the seam?
Yeah, he was feeling for the seam. And I thought, man, that dude is on it, you know?
He knows what he
69, huh? Let me see that. Greg Allman.
Do you want to take a...
We should probably take a quick break here. And then when we come back, just to pass out the phone number, we will be taking calls if you guys want to call in and ask any questions. The phone number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815.
We'll be right back.
Hey everybody, it's Norm from Norm's Rare Guitars. Want to thank you all at Flow Guitar Enthusiasts for helping us promote our show. We're doing a show for the homeless, the Midnight Mission, January 11th at MIT. It's going to be featuring Joe Bonamassa, Robin Ford, Jimmy Vivino, Jimmy Earl, and Grant Geisman, and more. And there's going to be some other big names, so please stay in touch with us, and we'll be happy to let you know who else is going to be on the show.
We are back, and I just wanted to mention, we were talking about aging, guitars aging. We had on last week Billy Sheehan, and he was talking about Yamaha's this process of how they age the wood and everything. It was pretty fascinating. They have this whole process. And actually, let me bring up this question, because I think part of it is the aging and the drying out of the glue and the finish. But also, too, breaking it in, actually physically playing it. And we've heard about people using sound to basically age the guitar artificially by just vibrating the body. What do you think about that? Do you think that really works, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I personally use the ToneRite device, which is you put on the strings of the bridge. Mm-hmm. It constantly sends vibrations through the wood. Because what makes a guitar sound better is the vibrations as it ages. It makes the wood loosen up. It expands the grain so you can have more of a tone. So I've been using this ToneRite that was handed down to me by ToneRite Company to use on the guitar. And I've been using it. I have a Mitchell MX-400 I just bought a couple months ago. And I've been using it on it. And the guitar sounds really nice using the ToneRite. You know, so that product is ToneRite, if you guys were interested in looking at it.
How long do you leave it on for?
You leave it on. You leave it on all the time. If the guitar is not being played, you keep it on, and it just vibrates the wood. It just keeps the wood conditioned for playing.
Very interesting.
How long do you think you would use that before you think it's aged enough? Or?
You know what? I would never take it off my guitar when it's sitting. You know, I'll just leave it there, and it just sounds better by the day. It does. I swear by it. And I showed it to Hank Linderman from the Eagles in Chicago, and he told me he's also felt the difference in the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because I heard that there's a certain, especially with acoustic guitars, there's a sweet spot, and then after that it starts, the tone starts degrading. So this article that I read, this was years ago, after about 50 years, the guitar tone starts deteriorating, especially on acoustic guitars. Do you agree with that?
On a really well-made acoustic guitar, it shouldn't, because the bracing is actually designed to age. Like a really good Guild or a Martin, that's the only reason those guitars last so long is the bracing and the way they're, you know, slowly made the old school way, you know.
Well, mm-hmm. The other thing is the more you play the guitar, the more you adjust it as you age the guitar. When you age the guitar, you have to adjust it as you go, because if you're going to keep the same standards, your guitar is going to lose its tone, and you have to make sure that it's working according to your specs when you play the guitar. So when you change the strings, always check intonation.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, but like with acoustic guitar, what do you do?
Acoustic guitar, when you change strings, I always check for intonation as well. You can always tweak the truss rod, because it's wood. Wood expands and shrinks and expands. So you have to make mm-hmm. sure it depends on the temperature and what you're looking at when you're playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm. You know, Guitar Player magazine ran a whole article about this company that's making glass guitars, and talk about the resonating factor. They did experiments. They made glass guitars with big bubbles in them. They made glass guitars with little bubbles in them, and less bubbles, more bubbles, and they got all kinds of different resonance out of glass guitars. So right. Go figure. So
sure.
Well,
yeah.
Well, makes glass sense.
Physics. Yeah.
But the actual holes in it. And another friend of mine was telling me, if you drill into the side of a guitar, you can actually get more bass out of any electric guitar. It's not something I wanted to experiment with on any of my guitars, but.
Well, that's interesting, because like a semi-hoddle, like a 335. Compared to a Les Paul like mine, that's a solid slab of wood, and I think yours is the same way, Monique. My Les Paul, the lower strings, you can almost play bass on that. Thing's deep, and it goes way down there. And but like a 335, which is basically a routed out guitar with a maple block, yeah. doesn't have the low end. I've noticed that. Or even my double cutaway with the softer wood. It's a mahogany body. It's a slab of mahogany, you know, like an SG type. Wood doesn't have the low end. I don't know. Is that be?
But those guitars, both those guitars you just mentioned, are meant to have sweet mids. You know,
right.
You know, really, that's where they shine.
But when you hollow out, like a hollowed out Les Paul, isn't that basically becoming like a 335?
Not really.
Really?
The size of the guitar is not there to make that guitar resonate. Right. And, you know, you have the big body on a 335 that just sounds brilliant. With yeah. the F holes in it, and it has expanded. You got to understand, when you play guitar, the sound is coming outward, not inward. Everybody goes, oh, where's the sound hole? When you have a sound hole on a guitar, everybody thinks the strings is ringing into that hole. Actually, it's going from the bridge, and it's vibrating outward.
That's right. It's an air pump.
Yeah, it's an air pump. Yeah. So,
and it has an arch back and an arch top.
That's true.
And the bracing inside also contributes to this projection.
Yeah, well, I've played chambered Les Pauls, and I don't feel like the chambering is the issue. I always feel like the neck is the issue if there's a thin tone to it. Mm. It just feels that way when it's in my hands. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I don't think the chambering is it.
Well, you also have these carbon fiber back guitars now that sound like plastic when you play them. You know, they just like the Ovation guitars. Some sound nice, some sound like crap. You know, because they just don't have that wood to vibrate. It's just plastic.
Yeah. A shallow bowl Ovation is a bad idea to me. Yeah. Really bad idea.
Well, they were. Yeah. Well, they were designed basically to play live.
I have a really nice deep bowl one from the 80s. It was the Al Dimeola model cutaway, right. And it's the fattest, deepest sounding one. And it's a nice guitar. I really like it a lot, but. It, you know, it's okay. I mean, it doesn't hold up to my guild. I mean, at all.
Oh yeah. No, okay. I have an old electric Legend, one of the early ones.
Legend, yeah.
And it's aged. The solid spruce top is aged, and it's a lot mellower sounding than when I remember I first had it. It made a big difference.
Yeah, I remember when Jimmy Page played that Ovation in the No Quarter tour.
The double neck?
Yeah, the double neck. You can actually hear the Ovation. You know it's an Ovation that he's playing.
Yes.
You can actually just, it just has that signature sound of Ovation on it.
Yeah, I think it's those pipes
or
bridges.
Well, they were the first ones to kind of break this barrier of an acoustic guitar that actually could be heard in a mix live, mm-hmm. which is a concept all its own. And they still haven't really got it all that great to me. I mean, I hear sometimes acoustic guitars sound good live, but not real often. They usually sound pretty
The guys that actually did it well, I think, was like James Taylor, but he used a little Sony mic in there. And now, and even Leo Kottke, I saw him play, and he had like three different systems mm-hmm. running, and he blended them.
If you want to hear a really good sounding guitar, Kevin Eubanks has a track called Adoration, and he's using a Martin D16 on that recording. And that's a beautiful guitar, custom made to Kevin Eubanks. It has a wide, extra wide neck, and the guitar is beautiful. One of the best sounding guitars I ever heard.
No, is that electric?
It's an acoustic Martin D16.
Oh, he's just using a straight acoustic.
Yeah.
So it's mahogany, right?
Yeah, mahogany body, yes.
Yep. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of electric, I mean, the whole thing with Ovation was the Piezo pickup, which was okay for the time. That was the only thing out there.
Yeah.
But now with LL Bags and
I mean, there's a lot. I was going to say RL Bags. I'm actually one of their endorsees, and they have a pickup that has a little microphone inside and the piezo. And if you use their combo system, it's pretty amazing
because
you get the deep tone out of the body inside. It's like the James Taylor thing you mentioned with the little mic inside.
I was just going to ask you guys, so since we're kind of talking about pickups, what pickups would you guys recommend changing? We'll start out maybe like, we'll start with the two different main guitars, right? A Les Paul and a Strat. And then like if, you know, you guys have different specialties, whether it's jazz or metal or rock or whatever, what would you guys recommend that people would change out the pickups to? Like, is there a brand of, like, if you want to be a metal player, you want to be a jazz player for Les Paul, and then we'll go to Strat.
Well, if it was a Les Paul and I wanted to be like a rock guitar, I'll probably just pop in, if it's not a guitar that's sounding really good anyway, I'll just pop in some DiMarzios in there and make it sound like a very fat, thick guitar, you know. And then also it depends on the rack effect, what you're using to make the pickup sound to how you control the guitar.
Would you use a high gain or would you use like a PAF with a lower?
I would use a high gain, you know, because everybody in metal wants to make it scream, you know. So if you're a lead guitarist, you'll be playing a high gain to make those screaming squeals. If you're a rhythm guitarist, then you'll go with a lower sounding pickup.
James, what would you do if you had like a blues player come in and said, what would I change these pickups to?
Single coil or humbuckers?
For Les Paul right now.
For Les Paul right now? You know, probably the JB. The JB is a great, versatile bridge pickup that Duncan makes. A lot of the guys like the Pearly Gates or the Jazz in the neck, you know, as well. Just kind of standbys, really.
I've had the best luck with Seymour Duncan pickup line all the way across. DiMarzio's I have owned a few of them. Even the hottest one, that double XL, like they call it with the rail, it was a rail pickup for really a heavy one. And at the end, I found DiMarzio's this is really general. They're a little grainier than the Seymour Duncan. I find the Seymour Duncan a little smoother. So if you like grindy, gritty, DiMarzio's is a good pick. If you like a smoother, a little more toward vintage, a little more toward the PAF, you're going to be happier with the Seymour Duncan pickups. And that's general.
They're safe.
Yeah, the Seymour Duncan has a super distortion pickup that sounds really cool through a nice fat amp.
Yeah.
Straight through, no effects. It has high output, it sounds great, it gives you low end and high end at the same time.
Monique, what would like Jerry Cantrell or Slash use?
More of the, what were they using? I was on another zone right here. I was thinking of the Strat sound for a second here because...
Well, we'll go to the Strat after that, and then you can...
Yeah, but the Duncans are real popular. Mm-hmm. Really popular. Antiquities, a lot of people order those. As far as the Strat tones are concerned, the real squawky, Clapton-y sound, I get a lot of orders for Les Censors.
Interesting.
There's a variety of those.
With the way the amps and effects are today... Really, you shouldn't let your pickup be too overpowering because you can't take it off. You can always add gain, but you can't take it off. So if your pickup is built to just burn and you're doing something else with it as well, if you're trying to play clean passages, etc., it's not going to clean up for you mm-hmm. as well. So you're better off to use like a PAF or just something slightly with a couple
range,
of extra lines like the JB, and then you'll be able to play nice clean stuff and then just... You know, turn the gain up on the distortion box just a little bit more to compensate if you're not feeling it. But really, today's electronics and amps, you don't need a high gain pickup.
No.
So switching gears to the Strat now. So we were kind of talking about the noiseless pickups that some of the people are putting on. What are your guys' opinions of those for Strat guitars?
Toneless.
I mean, in the sense of what? I mean, what?
Don't hold back, James.
They're mushy. They don't have the cut that you would want from a single coil. You're missing the noise, but they don't sound like a set of 62s.
Yeah, a Strat is a Strat. There's nothing much you can do to the pickups. If you're gonna play a Strat, you're playing a Strat for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're gonna be playing it for the sound that a Strat gives you. You know, if you want to do like a switching on it. It gets the sounds of a 57 Strat or a 57 Les Paul, just go with a fat Strat.
Do you see, are those like 60s Strat pickups or the 50s, are they pretty accurate or does that really matter or what do you feel?
Well, it depends on the guitar itself, you know. I mean, sometimes guitars are are built to sound a certain way, and if you're using like a 57 Strat, it has a nice thin sound to it. You know, it doesn't, not like the modern Strats that come with these high-end pickups now, because they've been wired and they've been dipped in wax and all this. But 57 has a unique tone. I mean, you can't really compare a 57 to a modern-day Strat.
And don't forget the old guitar. The magnets are going to get weaker. They're not going to get stronger. So you can't say, oh, man, my early 60s Strat is the most powerful guitar. It's going to – I'd be surprised. Really? You're stoked because those – you know, where was it stored? You know, in a nuclear facility? I'm
What do you, speaking of magnets, what do you think? There's Alnico and ceramic.
Ceramic is not good.
Yes.
No, Alnico all the way.
So the Duncans and the DiMarzios are all Alnicos?
Yeah. Well, not all DiMarzios are, all Duncans are, actually. That's not, you know, sometimes they've come off those formulas to try to, you know, like the high gain ones often aren't Alnico, oddly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Alnicos, like the Gibson PAFs or whatever, after so many years, they lose their magnetic properties. Is that an advantage? Does it give it more tone? Or?
Well, they lose the goss. You know, the magnet loses the goss, but that's what people are after. They're after that weaker magnet because that's part, I won't say all, but that's part of what makes that guitar sound the way that it does.
It makes it squishier and softer and sweeter and smoother. It's the roundy qualities that you get out of vintage stuff.
Right.
And again,
roundy.
There's no problem with that. You can just kick the gain up, you know, and
squishy,
man.
Right. Because I found, and let me know what you guys think. I found that because I remember everybody was going to high gain pickups and stuff, but using like a PAF, which is a lower output, I found it gave me more tone. It gave me more versatility. I could do different things.
You can turn down the volume control on your guitar, and it actually changes your tone.
Yeah.
If you turn down your volume, and it takes you to about 2 or 3 to get a difference in tone, that's too high of a gain of a pickup for you. You know, just you need to calm down, son.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the quality of these guitars, you know, you'd be playing them, and you say, okay, I had enough of this guitar, and you have to pick up another one and make sure that it's not your hearing. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes it's just that.
Well, it goes back to what the Celestian guy said at the top of the show. He said it's the bone to the tone. Mm-hmm. And every time you see a famous player, they could be playing on some amp you haven't seen them play on before, but it still sounds like them because that is what's critical, how they touch it, how hard they grip it, how hard they pick it. And if they switch to a different amp and they know they have to dig in a little bit more to get their sound or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to, though, the master and his tone, it's in his hands.
That's it. I did a lot of session work with Alan Sanderson. He did a lot of – he's done a lot of mixing for Weezer, and he's behind a lot of the records that a lot of people don't know about, Elton John, Rolling Stones. And every time I'd go into the studio, I'd bring all my guitars. And I had humbuckers, I had 335, Les Pauls, Les Paul Special, and every session he ended up picking my Telecaster, which was single coil. I mean, that was the one that it won every single time, but buzz and all. It worked in the mix,
mm-hmm.
You know?
No, that's true. It does have – it is true. It's in the hands. I've heard people – I mean, we've heard stories. Jeff Beck – guy walked in the studio, there's a Strat, they're just falling apart, and it just trashed. He picks it up, and it's just magic. You know, it's in the hands. Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's a gem.
We're out of time. This went fast, and we didn't even cover half the stuff I wanted to. So we're just going to have you guys back. But I want to say real quick, give everybody's links. James has www.jameshoodguitar.com and www.buffalobrothersguitars.com. Monique's on Facebook. Just look up Monique Caravello.
Yeah.
John Gumby Goodwin is on Facebook. You can find him. And also James Grover on Facebook. Anything, just real quick, last word before we go out.
Yeah, I just want to point out that me and Monique have teamed up for anybody who wants to become a guitar tech. They can contact the station here, and we can give them details on that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually, just you can either send it. We'll just go through us. Email at scott@flowguitarenthusiast.com or The Flow at Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
Yeah, and don't forget to look up. We actually already have one winner already so far on the Billy Sheehan giveaway for the autograph picture. So the lines of blue and green. What do they stand for on his pickup? So
yes,
find it in one of the videos. So I already have one winner, so got two more left.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. We really appreciate you coming on.
And we want to thank Celestian, too, for
And I really want to thank Monique because she helped me got everybody
thank
here together.
Oh,
and happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Stay tuned next week. Bob Bradshaw, Rack Mount Systems and rack systems that he's done for a lot of different people. Should be fun. Good night, everybody. Have a great week.